We've been watering things, keeping them alive. Well, I hope that you got a GPS tonight. A couple things that you guys specifically need to know about, and I'll mention two of them to you. One is our food pantry has been getting used a lot, which is great. I mean, it's great to have people come in. I think we've probably had 20 bags of food go out in the last 2 weeks, which, you know, it doesn't sound like a lot, but 20 bags of groceries is just like emptied those shelves, okay? So if you know it's bad if people are coming to get food and they feel bad and so they don't take as much as they would really like because they don't want to empty the shelves. You know, they don't want to be the – you know, when I was a camper at summer camp, if you emptied the jug of the table, you kill it, you fill it. So maybe they're thinking if I empty the shelf, I've got to repay it somehow. I don't know. But we need to fill it up. We've got to fill those shelves up. So just grab something extra this week as you're shopping. And I know that's expensive, but even if it's just one or two things that you can throw in the bag, in the basket or whatever, and bring that in, that'd be great. Yes, the freezer is very empty. So, you know, even if it's just a pack of hot dogs or, you know, yep, frozen waffles, corn dogs, I don't care, chicken nuggets, you know, those are really popular. I don't care. Just grab something, throw it in the freezer. The other thing that I want you to know about that I'm excited about it because I like this kind of stuff. We are going to be in the building on the 23rd, this coming Saturday, and we're going to be doing stuff. Okay, some is a little bit more involved physical than others. Like for example, it's time for the map to come down from the entryway. I know that some of you just are in love with that. Anybody want to take it home with them? You can put it on. You better talk to your dad. Is it, what? I don't want that.
Wiring on the back, so if somebody wants it.
Yep, if you wanna pick some people, missionaries to support around the world, drill a hole, put a light bulb in it, however, you know. But anyway, that's coming down, some new lighting back there, but we're also gonna be, we just need, some of it just, we need people to help carry stuff, cause we're gonna be emptying out these two rooms, okay, and the storage rooms downstairs, because there's some repairs that are needed in there, so we just need bodies to like haul stuff out of there so that we can fix it. And we want to get in here, we want to put some racks on the wall so we can put our sound equipment up, and we got some things cooking, so we could just use your help. It'll also be a great day to get in the kitchen and do a sniff test on everything in the refrigerator and just make sure that everything that's in there is fresh and organized in the kitchen. So that is Saturday at 8 a.m. I know it's early, but we'll have coffee, we'll have donuts, and we'll feed you, and we'll hopefully be here. You know, maybe it'll just be the morning, and we'll get out of here. It depends on how long it takes.
Kenny's bringing medicine Sloppy Joe's.
Oh,
okay. Well, I'm just going to come at noon. How many of you think, yes, I can be here for some or all of the time here at the building? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Okay. All right. I will get the word out to, you know, whoever's not here, and via email, we'll see if we can get a good group here to do some work. Be lots of fun. Okay, the rest, please look at, check it out for yourself. Oh, yes.
You don't have time to wait on that.
Yeah, I gotta emphasize this today. Guys, a lot of you helped with this in the past, but you know that we do a conference for small church pastors, okay, called Small Church, Big Deal. If anybody knows about small churches, it's me. It's us, all right? And so this is happening on the 28th and 29th of September. We're going to be doing it not at the Tyrone Covenant Presbyterian Church, but we're actually going to be up the street, up East Street and onto Grange Hall there, Main Street, Faith City. Okay, we're going to be in their building this year. Good friends with the pastor over there, Andrew Baransik, and he's graciously opened up their building. But we're going to need help with this. Now, right now, registrations are really low. That's typical. It's been that way the last two times I've done this. But I expect in this next week, you know, probably, I'm hoping for another 50 registrations to come in. But I'm going to need help setting that up, manning it, you know, manning the bookstore, the registration table, and just in general, being helpful at that. It really, I don't think you guys understand how much of a blessing this is to the pastors that come in. Every time we've done it, they have come to me afterward and just said, man, your team was awesome. They covered everything. They were everything I needed. Like as soon as I was looking for something, somebody was like, can I help you with something? They felt loved. They felt cared for. Awesome. Carl Vaders, who came the last 2 years and spoke, he came the second year and it was good, but he's still telling people that the conference he came to, small church, big deal, he says it is the best small church conference he has ever been to. The best run, the best volunteers, all around best one that he's ever been to. And he's getting a lot of speaking invitations. That's high praise. And he's telling people wherever he goes about that. So that, a lot of that is due to you guys and your stepping up and being involved in that. So I'm just putting that out there for you. I'd love to have your help. It's mainly Friday. Okay. There's a little bit of setup on Thursday, the day before, but mainly Friday to just kind of be there. And you know what, guys? This is good for us to hear too. It's going to be a fellow named Tim Suttle. He wrote a book called Shrink about having a faithful ministry in, you know, this culture that we're in where everything's about being bigger, better, higher, faster, stronger. I wrote a blog or a newsletter about it a couple weeks ago. You'll want to hear it because what it does is it gets our heads right about ministry. It gets our heads right about this because, you know, it'd be easy to look around and go, gosh, where is everybody? It wasn't that long ago. We had like twice as many people here. You're right. But you know what? We take what God brings us. We don't stomp our feet and whine. We go, okay, God, well, this is who we got. This is the team you put together. So what do you want us to do? And I think it'd just be really good for you guys to be involved in that and also to hear what Tim has to say. So that's on your GPS plan on that. If you can please help, that would be great. Circle S on the Connect card, actually. That way I know that we've got some help. All right, I'm going to let the kids go downstairs. And we will get to God's Word. So, we're in Revelation, as we have been for quite some time. And these chapters, we good? He was doing that last week too. I finally turned it off. We'll see. These chapters that we're in are some of the most depressing. Okay, because what they do is they summarize the demise of this worldwide kingdom that Satan has created, and he's put the beast in control of it, his puppet basically, this false prophet that's deceiving everybody. And it's just we really are in some pretty desperate times here. We've got the bowl judgments being poured out. We've got the downfall of this worldwide kingdom, this empire that's been set up. I mean, it's sad. It's sad stuff. The government, our government, world governments are rarely what they appear to be. Now, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, okay? You won't find me on Facebook spouting off about, you know, what really happened at, you know, this event or that event or whatever. I think that governments in general are not the most transparent organizations. Nor do I think most governments truly have the people's best interests at heart. I think that we can see that when, you know, when senators and congressmen will vote for things that really are not best for the country, but it sure helps them a lot. You know, some lobbyist promises them something, or some, you know, special interest group is going to, you know, fund their next campaign or whatever. I don't think that everything that happens is somehow connected to covert government operations, but I don't fully trust government. And I'm not saying I don't love my country. I take everything they say with a huge grain of salt. Okay. I think there's so many moving parts and so many different people with different agendas. And as a whole, I just don't put my faith in government entities. I try not to put my faith in anything other than God. Right. Okay. But there are a lot of people who do trust government. You know, they do trust that big brother, that Uncle Sam, whatever, or whatever government they sit under is going to help them. They trust that the checks are going to keep coming, that they'll have affordable health care, that the government will take care of them, that people in charge will make good decisions about national security, immigration, judicial appointments, all of those things. And the list could go on. But there are millions around the world and throughout history who have learned the hard way that you can't always trust your human leaders, okay? Trusting a human leader can be dangerous, it can backfire, and all we've studied in Revelation so far tells us that one day a ruler is gonna rise, okay? And he is gonna be empowered by Satan himself, and he's gonna win the trust of the world. He's gonna woo people, okay? And he's gonna draw them in, and he's gonna be in charge. This beast that we talked about a few chapters ago, this dragon will rise out of the sea and out of the land, and he'll establish this worldwide empire. He's going to rule economically, socially, spiritually, and militarily. And he'll be known as the beast, and this minister of propaganda will be known as the false prophet. But this kingdom will fall. It will fall. And that's what chapter 17 and 18 are about. And they are the specific details of its demise. So it's good that we can see this. We can see exactly what's going to happen. Now, where do these chapters fit with what we've studied so far? Because Revelation, as hard as I've tried to explain it and try to, you know, separate all the parts and try to help you understand it all, it's still really confusing. It's a lot, okay? A lot of symbolism and everything. But let's just try to understand where this fits. I want you to look at Revelation chapter 16. It's here on the screen, or will be, and it's in your Bibles, but whichever you want to look at. But chapter 16, verse 19 says, "The great city," this is after an earthquake, "the great city was split into three parts, and the cities of the nations fell, and God remembered Babylon the Great to make her drain the cup of the wine of the fury of his wrath." Who's Babylon the Great? Babylon is the name that John gives to this worldwide empire, okay? And he says, basically in this verse, what God is saying is, Babylon, I haven't forgotten about you. I'm coming for you. And so here we read about this earthquake, and the city is destroyed, but God says, that's not all. I'm going to finish you off. And so that's what chapter 17 is about. So let's take a look at chapter 17. Let's look at verses 1 through 6. "Then one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls came and said to me, 'Come, I will show you the judgment of the great prostitute who is seated on many waters, with whom the kings of the earth have committed sexual immorality, and with the wine of whose sexual immorality the dwellers on earth have become drunk.' And he carried me away in the spirit into a wilderness, and I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast that was full of blasphemous names, and it had seven heads and ten horns. The woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet and adorned with gold and jewels and pearls, holding in her hand a golden cup full of abominations and the impurities of her sexual immorality. And on her forehead was written a name of mystery, Babylon the Great, mother of prostitutes and of earth's abominations. And I saw the woman drunk with the blood of the saints, the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. When I saw her, I marveled greatly." So John is picturing this world empire as a woman. Specifically as a prostitute, okay, and the mother of prostitutes. That's strong language, alright? But John is trying to portray for the reader what this world government has been doing. And he's saying it in very, very ugly terms. He says, this world empire is involved in prostitution. Now, there's probably some sexual element to this, but what he's really saying is that this world empire, ruled by Satan, is selling her goods and her services to the highest bidder, okay? So basically selling herself and reaping the benefits while the world continues to be deceived and led astray. This world empire is not for the world in any sense. It's in business, it's in existence for itself. She benefits from the merchants, the consumers, and doesn't care about them. And can I just suggest that that's the spirit of our world today? That is the spirit of our world, of its enterprises, of its economy, of, you know, its governments. Everything is in that direction. It's not about caring for its subjects, okay? It's in it for itself. And that's why for John, when he's describing this, you know what he's really doing? He's describing the Roman Empire. Because for John, that was the empire of his day that was doing this. That was just selling itself, its goods and services to the highest bidder. It was just, you know, it didn't matter who it did business with as long as it profited. Isn't that the essence of prostitution? Okay, so that's what he's saying, is the Roman Empire is doing this. The catch here though is that things in Rome didn't play out the way John describes it. So he's talking about a future kingdom. Okay, but he needed that context. He needed that frame of reference to understand what God was showing him. In fact, Rome didn't officially fall until 476, and even then it was this slow death over the centuries, and it kind of whimpered into non-existence. So we're clearly not talking about an empire, a Roman empire here, the one of AD 90, okay, in John's time. And he may have thought so. But it's hard to confine this prophecy to a specific point in time. So what I'm saying is that John was able to picture this future empire because the Roman Empire was this way. They were takers. And that's what so many governments and so many leaders in our world are marked by, is their desire to take. They're like prostitutes, selling what they have to offer to whoever's willing to pay. They don't care about what individuals need. It's a selfish desire. It's a deeply selfish and narcissistic way to live, and our culture is saturated with narcissism. It is absolutely permeated with self-focus. It's just how we live. And it's no wonder that no one ever really catches on to what Satan is doing as he's setting up this world empire. Because they're so focused on themselves. This empire is focused on itself. Everybody's got their own noses just right buried in front of them in whatever their business is. You know, people expect that type of behavior from their leaders, and honestly, it's what they would do if they had the chance. They would do the same thing. They would use their position for themselves. And I know you say, wow, Chris, that's pretty cynical. I mean, you got a pretty grim view of humanity. Well, I think it's justified. I don't want to be the cynic who says there's no good people out there, and there's no, you know, but even the Bible says there's none righteous, not even one. But our world is so just self-focused. I mean, we are in a culture where people will camp out on sidewalks for days in order to get the newest phone. Who does that? I mean, who is so obsessed with having the newest technology that they'll camp out on a sidewalk? People with no jobs, I guess, yeah. How are they buying that phone if they're not working? I mean, yeah. I mean, we live in a culture where people actually care how many Instagram followers they have. What? They buy Instagram followers? I am not aware of this. Wow, okay. Well, then it's even worse than I thought. We are surrounded by people who are on the perfect, or the daily quest to take the perfect selfie. I've seen these, especially young girls. I've seen one that just, you know, doing this and putting out the lips, you know, the pouty lips and the hip and everything. Oh, that didn't work. Let me try that again. I'm going, are you serious right now? Like, I think the first one was fine. Actually, none would have been good, but gotta get that perfect selfie. We live in a culture where being counterculture is cool as long as you're the same kind of counterculture as everyone else. Kind of like, you see these people, I know when I was a teenager, it was the kind of grungy look, right? Everybody, the goth thing was kind of in. But you know what all those goth people ended up doing? Hanging out with other goth people, right? They found their tribe. But that's just the culture we live in is, you know, it's about us, me, me, me. It's all about whether or not I'm accepted by others. And so we are selfish individuals. It leads to selfish business and social practices, and it leads to selfish governments, and ultimately a selfish and self-obsessed culture. And you contrast this with Jesus in his words from Luke 9. He says you're to deny yourself. And you are to take up your cross, okay, and follow him. And when you contrast our culture with those words from Jesus, you start to get a sense of just how deep this conflict goes. Because the idea of denying oneself in this culture is so counterculture that it's mocked. It's so radical. It can't even be believed. You would what? You would say no to what you really want. You mean you'd get up on Sunday fun day and you'd go to church when you could be out picnicking or what were the other things people were doing when you saw that on Facebook? What are they going to do? Going to the beach. Yeah. The Sunday fun day. What is that? Hashtag Sunday fun day. I'm just irritated by that. So when John calls this evil government a prostitute, he is All he's doing is he's describing it as a means by which people can gratify their desires. This kingdom that's set up by Satan is doing what he has attempted to do all throughout history, and that is to get people to get their eyes off of God and put their eyes on themselves and what they want. Okay? And you can see what this empire is offering. Look at verse 4, chapter 17. It's wealth. It says she's arrayed in purple and scarlet, adorned with gold and jewels and pearls. She's surrounded by wealth. Money is such a lure. It is such a lure. It's one of the reasons it's the leading temptation that Satan puts in front of people through this empire. Jody and I have talked about what we'd do to the house if money were no object. That's a game we play. All right, so you got unlimited funds. What would you do first? And I'm like, well, I'd take the door out of the back of the house and I'd move it into the laundry room and I'd put this here and I'm upstairs. I'd rearrange all the walls. I mean, we got all these dreams and stuff we would do, right? We talk about where we'd have our second or third or fourth home, you know, where we'd travel. No, don't own the two. Oh, tiny house in Arcadia. Okay. But money's been the downfall of so many, and Satan knows this. That's why he uses it, okay? Especially at the end, because it is a potent weapon. And so when we get to chapter 18, we'll see that the people mourning her demise, mourning the fall of this empire, are the people not who really loved her, okay? They're not patriots. They're not like, oh, all hail, you know, Satan's kingdom. But they're mourning because their money maker is gone. Their piggy bank is being destroyed. They loved what they got from this empire, the kings, the merchants, the traders. They weep over her death because they lose their livelihood. So this kingdom is all about prostitution. The second thing, though, it's all about blasphemy. Look at verse 3. This is truly the top of the list. It says, he carried me away into a wilderness. I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast that was full of blasphemous names. This is sacrilege here, that their leader has set himself up as God to be worshipped. It's wickedness, okay? This goes to the root, the core of humanity's problem, and that is that we set ourselves up in the place where only God should be. Okay? That's part of that self-focus, as we're worshipping us. We're worshipping the created instead of the creator. But this kingdom, at the top of the food chain of this kingdom, is this leader who is declaring himself to be God. When you start marking people and you tell them you can't buy or sell unless you've got my mark, okay? When you herd Christians together for their extermination, when you start controlling commerce and religion and governance, you are making a statement. You're saying, I am supreme, I rule. You want to get God's attention, just tell him you're in charge. Tell him, God, you're no longer needed. You will have his attention. But what Satan's king and kingdom do here is really no different than what's been happening throughout history. I mean, millions declare themselves to be gods of their own life and destiny. It just so happens that this guy is doing it from the top of a worldwide government. There's a third thing this empire is doing. Look at verse 6. This empire has been murdering people. I saw a woman. Look what she's drunk with. The blood of the saints. Drunk with the blood of the saints, the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. This empire, as we've seen earlier, has been systematically killing Christians, beheading them. And when you look at this idea of being drunk on the blood of saints, when you're drunk, that idea of intoxication, you're carried away by the effects of the alcohol. And in the same sense, this kingdom is intoxicated, carried away by the blood of the saints. It's something that excites them. They enjoy what they're doing. But again, I've got to relate this back to the world that we live in. We live amidst a murderous culture. We are a murderous bunch. I mean, we have this weird sense of morality. I don't think we get angry as much as we used to about what we see on the news. And, you know, I'm not going to say this definitively, but I think the number of tragedies we hear about on the news, part of me feels like that can't be of God. Because what it does is it numbs us to tragedy. It numbs us to human suffering. Because we see it so much. Even the, even the images coming out of the Caribbean and out of Florida and Houston. I mean, we're gripped by that. And like, oh man, how horrible would that be? And I know people are going down to help, but do we really feel it as acutely as we used to? I can say for myself that I don't. We tend to have a messed up sense of morality too. I think, you know, you go back to August and what happened in Charlottesville and, you know, people driving into crowds, and that it happened in London before that. I mean, all over the place people have been, you know, having cars driven into these crowds. But then you just gloss right over the violence that continues in our major cities. Murders happening all the time. And we're outraged about one and we shrug our shoulders at the other. It is this world's indifference to violence and destruction that's going to allow this future empire to kill millions of Christians. There's not going to be anybody standing up going, that's wrong, stop that. We already live in a culture where we murder millions of babies every year. By the time this happens, there's going to be basically two responses to this empire being intoxicated by the blood of the saints. One, people are going to be going, well, those Christians are troublemakers anyway, they deserve to die. Or two, they're going to go, I'm just glad I got my mark. Right hand, forehead, I'm good, I'm safe. Glad it's not me. Well, as we go through the rest of this chapter, in the next 12 verses, we learn more about the identity of the woman in this worldwide empire. And it's partially formed when a group of kings and other leaders, national leaders and world leaders, they give their authority to the beast. They basically hand it over and say, okay, we'll get behind you. We'll be a party of what you're doing here. Look at verses 15 through 18 with me, chapter 17. The angel said to me, the waters you saw where the prostitute is seated are peoples and multitudes and nations and languages, and the 10 horns that you saw, they and the beast will hate the prostitute. They will make her desolate and naked and devour her flesh and burn her up with fire. For God has put it into their hearts to carry out his purpose by being of one mind and handing over their royal power to the beast, until the words of God are fulfilled. And the woman that you saw is the great city that has dominion over the kings of the earth. So this prostitute is seated on many waters, representing peoples and nations and multitudes and languages, basically representing her control over the whole world. She's the seat of the beast kingdom, and its people will be used and abused. And it says these 10 horns represent 10 kings. Okay? These kings are going to be in this coalition with the prostitute, even though they hate her. They can't stand her. Okay? Well, with the prostitute Babylon identified, let's move into chapter 18. And John records three groups of people singing funeral songs over this empire. Okay, take a look. Chapter 18. It says, after this, I saw another angel coming down from heaven, having great authority, and the earth was made bright with his glory. And he called out with a mighty voice, fallen, fallen is Babylon the Great. She has become a dwelling place for demons, a haunt for every unclean spirit, a haunt for every unclean bird, a haunt for every unclean and detestable beast. For all nations have drunk the wine of the passion of her sexual immorality, and the kings of the earth have committed immorality with her, and the merchants of the earth have grown rich from the power of her luxurious living. Then I heard another voice from heaven saying, come out of her, my people, lest you take part in her sins, lest you share in her plagues. For her sins are heaped high as heaven, and God has remembered her iniquities. Pay her back as she herself has paid back others, and repay her double for her deeds. Mix a double portion for her in the cup she mixed. As she glorified herself and lived in luxury, so give her a like measure of torment and mourning. Since in her heart she says, I sit as a queen, I'm no widow, and mourning I shall never see. For this reason, her plagues will come in a single day, death and mourning and famine, and she will be burned up with fire, for mighty is the Lord God who has judged her. Yeah. So again, John is thinking of Rome here. Again, it would be hard for him to not imagine that. Just like it would be hard trying to imagine a world power that matches the United States step for step. We've got to just step back here for a second and realize that the spirit of this empire is alive and well today. And any authority on earth can revive it and embody this spirit. Okay? And as I said, Rome fits the description in John's time. There was a time later in history where Great Britain might have fulfilled it. They were worldwide, dominant. America might look a lot like this at times. America has got a lot of power and influence on the world stage. Our media influences the entire world. Okay, so it's hard not to see some similarities here. But whatever kingdom this is describing in the future, it's going to be the social, religious, and political base of operations for the last attempt by the Antichrist to establish his kingdom. I want you to look at how John describes this capital city of the evil empire, okay? First he says it's a place of demons and uncleanness. Look at verse 2. He says it's a haunt for every unclean spirit. All this uncleanness. If there's evil in every city on earth, then this one is seething with demonic influence. It is just crawling with it. Everywhere lurks this spirit of evil. He also says it's a place where people have paid to get something from her in verse 3. They've gotten pleasure. They've gotten wealth. You know, these kings and merchants, they know that this kingdom is evil. The other rulers, they know it's evil. It even says that they hate her. They want to destroy her. They hate it. They know how evil. But they keep coming back. Keep coming to get more. You know, it's like when you bought that chocolate bar you shouldn't have bought, and you're like, I need to stay away. Or Karen brings, you know, chocolate covered strawberries, and you're like, Karen, doggone it, and you've had one, and then you have another, and then and you just know what it's doing to you, but you can't stop, right? So it's kind of what's going on here. They can't stop going back. They keep getting what they want from this city. And then it says it's a place deserving payback. Look at verses 5-8. I love what John says here, or how God puts it through John. He says, pay her back as she herself has paid back others. Repay her double for her deeds. Mix a double portion for her. And then it says in verse 7, match the glory she had and the luxury she had with the same amount of torment and mourning. So this place deserves payback. You know, give her an equal measure of torment. And then he says in verse 8, and verse 10, and verse 17, and verse 19, this is a place that's going to be destroyed quickly. There is no waiting on this. There's no extended period of mercy. It says in a single hour, your judgment has come. Look at verse 21 for a second. It says, a mighty angel took up a stone like a great millstone and threw it into the sea, saying, so will Babylon, the great city, be thrown down with violence and will be found no more. A millstone. Have you ever seen a millstone flutter to the ground? No. Especially when it's thrown by an angel, okay? They're heavy. So this indicates the fall of this great city and this empire is not going to be this slow, dramatic tumble down, but it's going to be this powerful throw from an angel hurled down into the depths of the sea. I mean, if you've ever taken a large rock, and maybe some of you did this when you were younger, but you take this big rock and you heave it into a pond or into a lake or something, you watch it go in, big splash, woohoo, the ripples go out. What do you see after about 5 minutes? Nothing, right? Okay, disappears under the water, the ripples are done, and you'd never know a stone went in there. And so Satan, for all his supposed greatness, his kingdom will fall one day, and when it's over, you'll hardly remember it was there at all, because Jesus, as we'll see next Sunday night, is coming. Okay, and he's gonna set this all right. There's some people that are mourning, are weeping about this empire's demise, okay? If we're here, if we're alive when this all goes down, we're not going to be weeping, okay? We're going to be rejoicing. But there's people that are going to be weeping, they're going to be wailing, they're going to be upset. And they're the same people that are weeping and wailing when the economy fails today. When things are going on, when the vote goes the wrong way, these are the same people that are weeping and wailing. Look at verses 9 and 10. These are the kings of the earth, the rulers of the earth. It says, the kings of the earth who committed sexual immorality and lived in luxury with her will weep and wail over her when they see the smoke of her burning. They will stand far off in fear of her torment and say, alas, alas, you great city, you mighty city Babylon, in a single hour your judgment has come. Why are they wailing? Because they enjoyed her company. They enjoyed the satisfaction they received. These are people who banked on this empire lasting a long time. But they see it going down. They're not rushing to help. They're standing back in horror. They're like, I don't want any part of that. Just as Satan is a user, these kings were using this empire to line their pockets. There's no love lost here. It's the same for the merchants. Verses 11 through 17, they're crying. Everything they sold to this empire is now gonna be destroyed. Their cash cow's gone. That makes me happy. The merchants are going down. They're upset, you know? We got some merchants in our world today. They do some things that are just dirty, rotten, low down, you know? You go down, you go to the store, right? And you pick that bag of chips off the shelf. And you look at it, it says 9¾ ounces. And you go, wait a minute, it's the same price as the 13-ounce bag was 2 years ago, right? They're tricking you. They do the same thing with ice cream. Yeah, they're sneaky, I'm telling you. And you know, you watch those commercials, they're so good at getting you to buy what they're selling. You know, those copper pans, we've got them, right? You bought it just to burn cheese in it, didn't you? You wanted to burn cheese in the copper pans, you could see how it didn't stick. I know. Those guys deserve to cry for doing that to us. That's not cool. And then in verses 17 through 19, we read about the sea captains and the traders and everybody doing their business by sea. Their livelihood is gone. Guys, when this happens, it's going to happen suddenly. And the things that marked the world, the things that marked your, you know, life here on earth as normal are going to be done. If you go through verses 22 and 23, you'll see that this is sudden, catastrophic destruction. In verse 22, we read that music is going to cease. All the entertainment that's going on. The craftsmen are going to stop crafting and the economy is going to fail. The millstones are going to stop grinding. It means food production is going to halt. The lights are going to go out. That means hope is gone. Weddings are going to be done. No more weddings. Human relationships are going to change forever. Everything else is going to change when Jesus brings us with him when he comes back. The city of Babylon represents everything that's evil in this world. We see glimpses of this kind of evil in our governments today, but this final world capital is going to embody this spirit of evil, the spirit of evil of this age. It's going to hold nothing back in its hatred for God and his people. And here's the thing, church, our responsibility is to place our trust where it matters. To place our trust in something that will last. Not in our government, not in our leaders. See, right now you can be a good citizen and a Christian. It won't always be that way. A time will come when you will not be able to be a Christian and be a good citizen. You will have to choose. But what is the real story here? Because I've told you a lot about this empire of evil and how it really reflects our world today. But what's the real story? Well, there was a teacher who was helping his students understand journalism. There was a class, a journalism class, and he was trying to help them understand, what journalism is really about. And so he explained an event that was happening in the next week, and he wanted them to write a news piece about it for the school newspaper. And so he said, you know, the faculty at the high school here will be attending this all-day conference in Kalamazoo. There will be some top education researchers there sharing information about how to, you know, do different tactics and methods in the classroom, and so go ahead and write your story. So the kids, he started writing their stories, but with each one they would bring to the teacher, he'd say, nope, you missed it. Nope, you missed it. And he stopped at one point and said, look, you're writing for the school newspaper, now give me a story. But they all missed it. They kept, you know, the faculty of such and such high school will be going to Kalamazoo, and he says, no, you guys don't get it. So finally, at the end of the class, he said, gang, listen, what did I tell you is happening next week? The faculty's going to his conference, blah, blah, blah. And he said, right, so your story is there will be no school next Thursday because the entire faculty is gone. See, John knows his audience. He knows his audience. And so he leads with the most important thing. Look at chapter 18. Do you see it? Do you see what he leads with? Chapter 18. It's in verse 2. What he leads with is that the destruction of Babylon or Rome is in the past tense. He says, fallen, fallen is Babylon the Great. Think of how the believers in the seven churches must have felt when they read that. Once they understood that for their context, they understood he meant Rome. They understood that Rome wouldn't last forever. That there was an end to the oppression. There was an end to the persecution. It's past tense. It's not going to last forever. And so as we read this, we can understand the same thing, that the kingdoms of this earth, the self-centered, self-focused, narcissistic leaders in our world, they're not going to last. As God views it, this has already happened, and he can declare it in the past tense because it's a done deal. No matter what we've encountered in Revelation up until now, we can read it with the realization that Satan was defeated before he began. You know, the governments of this world, the people in this world, the way the culture runs, you know, that stuff's going to happen. You can't stop it. You single-handedly can't change the direction of our culture, right? But you can influence the people around you. You can share with them the fact that one day this is all going to come crashing down. And I don't know how you say it. I mean, you've got to find a way to say that in a way that isn't, you know, slamming them or whatever when you find out they're waiting in line for 5 hours or 5 days for a new phone. To go, hey, don't you know? Man, that's not going to last. I mean, I'm not saying you shouldn't have a new phone, okay? But that's not going to last. What is that going to do for you? Where's your trust? Where's your hope? We've talked about the selfishness of our world. We're going to sing a last song here. And how this empire really set itself up as this prostitute, you know, offering its wares and all that it had to the highest bidder, selling itself, and roping people in. But I think what we have to hold to is that Christ is enough for us. That we don't need satisfaction from a government or from any other group, really, from God himself, that he will supply. He is enough. So let's sing that.